For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And if you're watching us on YouTube at the Team 980, you see that I'm in a different place yet again. For a very silly twist of events, for the third time in a week, I am broadcasting from somewhere ahead of an Indiana Fever game. That's because I was in Indiana last week to see Aces Fever as they played a couple of games. But tonight, Caitlin Clark and company are in town in D.C. to close their regular season against the Mystics. The game is enormous for Washington. They need to win to have a chance to get in. If they do, there is a very good chance they would get in because they would need a Chicago loss, and Chicago is free-falling and playing a better opponent. And the Atlanta Dream, the other team they need to lose, are facing the New York Liberty, and they are obviously very good, as the Mystics found out yet again firsthand on Tuesday, number one seed in the entire WNBA. And so that is the situation playoff-wise going into tonight. We'll get back to that and a bunch of other stuff going on in the W. It's actually a fairly significant news, like 36 hours here, with Kareem Copeland, who's going to be on set with us at 5 o'clock. But mostly football, as you would imagine, today, as we get ready for Monday Night Football next week and the Commanders get back to work. Today is their Wednesday. Of course, just everything shifted a day based off of the Monday Night Football schedule. And it's Thursday is always a fun day for me because at this point in the week, because we record Take Command in the morning, I have taken a look at the film for the other team and have some semblance of kind of what it is that makes them go, and talked to Logan about it. And so we recorded a preview that is out, and we'll give you a little bit tomorrow here on the radio. And obviously you can check it out on demand whenever you like. But it's an interesting matchup because offensively they don't do anything that complicated, Cincinnati. And the complicated stuff is where Washington has really struggled so far this year. They have struggled to fit game plan style runs, traps, whams, draws, things that are meant to take advantage of some of the stuff they're doing, as opposed to just line up and, like, let's get off a block on a duo play. Think halfback dive in Madden. Let's just get off a block and make a tackle. They've struggled more so with the other stuff. They've struggled with, like, stacks and bunches and communicating in the secondary. And Cincinnati, so far this year, doesn't really do a lot of that stuff. Now, the reason why they don't do a lot of that stuff is the part that's terrifying, which is they don't particularly need to. It's an offense built on the fact that they have Joe Burrow. And it's so funny, interesting, whatever word you want to put here that kind of fits in that family, to watch an offense just go, yeah, we're good at all times. To see how it affects the game planning, to see how it affects the play calling, to see how it affects how they manage a football game, because they don't have to take a lot of risks. Because at the end of the day, if they get stuck in, you know, they run the ball quite a bit on first down, for instance, but they're not that good at it. But they know we don't want to take a sack. We don't want to, you know, take too much risk. So if we run, get 2 yards and it's second and eight, we'll just run a spacing concept and have five guys run hooks on second down. And we're going to have Joe Burrow pick the right one. And like 75-80% of the time he's going to do that. We're going to get 5 yards, and we've gone from second and eight to third and three, and now the world is our oyster. That's a cheat code. That's not fair. You can't just spread three receivers out, one back, one tight end, simple stuff, or maybe even you go two tight ends, but pretty basic formations, and just be like, we're guaranteed 5 yards because our quarterback can take a shotgun snap, survey the field, and hit who, like, whichever is the proper guy and read out any coverage. That's shooting fish at a barrel. But that is exactly how Cincinnati is able to operate, because Burrow, in that quick game element, is that freaking good. And so it's really wild to watch. I know that doesn't sound like a big deal, but, again, to manage second and long. And, like, the Commanders have done this so far this season in a very different way. They've found ways to be in good down and distances or overcome bad down and distances because Jaden's been able to scramble so effectively. And so their plan is kind of just like, hey, send everybody away and wait for the rush to go by, and then Jaden will pick up the yardage. And not that that's the plan, but that's how it's played out. And for Burrow, it's like very low risk of sack, very low risk of interception, very low risk, frankly, of incompletion in some of these concepts where he is just a master of his craft. And because especially they have Ja'Marr Chase, where they can move him around a little bit and they can get good matchups for him and get him in spaces where they like, it is a real opportunity for them to just, I don't want to say steal yards, but as close as you can realistically in the NFL to guaranteeing positive outcomes. Cincinnati has the ability to do that. Now, the way to disrupt that is, I don't know, pass rushing defensive tackles who arrive at the quarterback very quickly. And in theory, Washington has that. And they have it going up against a Cincinnati O-line that is a little hit or miss week to week in terms of their performance. And so I would like to explore a little bit of what Dan Quinn had to say today, starting with how he's, because I think the notion in the fan base is that, and frankly amongst a lot of media as well, and to some extent, my hand goes up here. John Allen, Daron Payne certainly haven't played up to their paychecks, but have they truly played poorly? Here's Dan Quinn today at the podium on just how his two star defensive tackles have played so far this season.
Yeah, through the first two, I definitely know their presence inside. Some games you get more chances to rush and some games you don't. So what we want to always make sure is we're finding the matchups when we can and get into some dropback stuff. Sometimes when you have the production they've had, other people go into the game saying, okay, these two are not going to ruin the game as well. So a little bit of both, but yeah, we're definitely looking forward to them for this week and really making their impact. And they want that too.
I don't think that they've played with particularly poor effort. I don't think that they've played with particularly poor like technique on a down-in, down-out basis. But clearly the production needs to grow for them in terms of what you're getting down-in, down-out. It's one thing to play okay as a defensive tackle and not accumulate a lot of stats on a lot of teams. Because realistically, a lot of times your job is to just eat double teams and let other guys make plays. But that's not how this defense is designed from a roster construction standpoint, right? It is really hard to play this way, and it's something that I want to talk about with Dan Pizzuta from the 33rd team, who's been awesome with us the first 2 weeks. He's with us again coming up at 4:30. But when your roster is constructed for your defensive tackles to make plays, like how does it affect how you actually perform as a defense? Because if you got playmakers at those positions, you want to just tell those guys, hey, eat double teams every single snap and then let's let Frankie Louvu and Bobby Wagner make all the plays. Or, hey, we're going to rely on our edges to take advantage of their one-on-one matchups because they're not going to win as often as premier edges. Where if you have a guy who's just awesome at eating double teams and then can let the edges eat on the outside, that becomes a different equation that is something that is not new to NFL defenses. We've seen that with premier edges, as long as any of us have been watching football. So if they're just going to eat these double teams and teams are going to plan on that being the case because they're going to double team them, like what does Dan Quinn do about that for John Allen and Daron Payne?
I want to be clear. I think what we're probably talking about first, John, is like first and second down, because the play pass, you can still do a double, but it's a run action. So I think when you're talking about trying to get four hands on them, that's, it didn't happen every snap, but that is something, on the first and second downs, how do you beat it? Some blitzes where you're looping and getting outside. And so those are some of the ways that we do that. If we had actually, gotten him down a few times in Tampa, I would say the conversation's probably a little bit different, but that's competing and that's ball. So what do we like to do? Get some on the move. That helps guys who have that kind of quickness for their size, and we'll continue to do that.
And that's the thing. From a double team standpoint, it's one thing if they're inside. And this is something that I expect now that Johnny Newton is his snap count is rising, and hopefully he is a bigger part of this defense moving forward. If you can have Newton, Allen, and Payne on the field at the same time, you can put one of those guys at an end, and now you can't double-team all of them. And they're going to have to start experimenting with some of this stuff in certain situations that it works. And a team like Cincy's really interesting to think about experimenting that, you know, that idea with, because they don't do a lot of the stuff that New York probably, or they probably won't do a lot of the stuff that New York did. Brian Daboll was like, we do not really trust Daniel Jones to read the field quickly, and we don't really trust our offensive line, and we don't have the horsepower to overcome bad situations. And so we're going to go seven-man protections. We're going to go a lot of play action. And the Bengals aren't going to do as much of that stuff if they stick to who they've been through the first two games of the season. It's going to look more like Tampa in terms of, you know, hey, against Tampa, the Commanders got pressure on like two-thirds of their the dropback snaps. It was crazy how frequently they got pressure. Problem was they couldn't finish for a lick, and they got, I think, no sacks or one sack or whatever it was, and Baker absolutely diced them in second play situations as he extended plays. And if you let Burrow do that, he will equally murder you, and you're going to give up damn near 40 points again. And so there are ways to scheme around some of this stuff. Some of this stuff is just going to be, hey, the back end has to hold up better. But I think this chess game is going to be ongoing, and I think that there are real opportunities against Cincy to try to get some of this right. The problem is, on the outside, you have Ja'Marr Chase going up against We'll See, and, you know, because we just don't know who's going to play that other outside corner yet. And that part of the experiment, I feel, not that I feel great about the interior and the line stuff, but that part of the experiment is clearly the part that I feel even worse about. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, more from Dan Quinn, talking about getting Terry McLaurin the football, amongst other things. And then coming up at 4:30, our guy Dan Pizzuta joins us. We are live at Capital One Arena, ahead of Mystics and Fever tonight on the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, and streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Making our way through some of what Dan Quinn and Jaden Daniels said today. And tomorrow morning, in your podcast feeds, there will be a Take 5, which is the 5-minute edition of Take Command, on whether or not Terry McLaurin should be getting more looks. Logan and I went into detail about how guys like Malik Nabers and Justin Jefferson and, I don't know, Ja'Marr Chase, for some reason, was a name that was on that list. Those guys get moved around and they're able to get 10-plus targets a game on a regular basis, where we look at Terry McLaurin as the best receiver here and has been for a long time, and he very rarely crosses that threshold. He has about, you know, 15 or so times in his career, but certainly so far this season hasn't been the word I'll use is spammed. Right, you just be like, we're going to throw that guy the football a ton. There's been certainly a more concerted effort in week 2 than week 1, but there has not been the game plan to just be like, we got to get 17 the ball with every 4 to 5 pass attempts, in the way that Justin Jefferson gets it in Minnesota, in the way that oftentimes they will try to get that for Jamar Chase in Cincinnati. Oftentimes, it looks like Malik Nabers is going to get that in New York this year. And so both Jaden Daniels and Dan Quinn were asked about this today. Dan was actually asked about it by Ben Standig earlier in the week as well, and basically was like, you know, it wasn't so much about Terry. It was about, you know, hey, how does a guy like Nabers get that, since Nabers had 18 targets on Sunday against Washington? And he was like, well, they move him around. There's a bunch of different stuff that they do, and that's how those guys tend to get that. But here's what he said from being asked more directly about Terry McLaurin potentially getting a lot more targets on Sunday and moving forward.
Tried to move Terry around into different spots, which, you know, is important because he is, you know, has that like playmaking ability. So you want to find the spots to go. As we're going just into our second, you know, full lap together, there'll be more ops for him than we need them to be. What you don't want to do is force the ones that aren't there, and make sure, even though in a certain route he may be the primary read, but if that one's taken away, that you don't force that one and go to somewhere else. I really respect that about Jaden, of making good processing decisions. Sometimes you have a play design that's, you know, going to go to one place and it's not there. So the worst thing you could do is try to force something in that's not there. And so I'm pleased that we're not doing that. Do we want to get him involved? Man, you bet, in the biggest way. And so the catch and run opportunities, I thought we had, you know, one or two chances that we didn't go his way. One we had a penalty on that I thought, on a trap pass, I think Nick might have been down the field on a slant. That was going to be a big place. That one doesn't count as one of the targets to go.
The thing that's unsaid there is Terry is not, and I would not expect Dan to say this unless he was really, really frustrated, but you don't talk about your own players this way. And I hate talking about Terry this way too, because Terry's stand-up guy who I've really enjoyed covering and talking to over, you know, since his rookie year when I was still on the beat. One of the few guys I can say that about that's still around. But I don't expect his teammates to say this. I mean, maybe Terry would say it about himself, but he'd be, you know, say it in the frame of he's working on always getting better at it. He's just not those guys. And the very specific quality that he does not have that JJ and Nabers and Chase and some of these other guys, I mean, even a guy like Nacua or Kupp in LA, who have gotten enormous numbers of targets over the years, like, those guys have a short area quickness that opens up their route tree from the slot. They have, this year, move Terry around a little bit. I know he lines up on the left the predominant number of times, but again, left is a direction, and even when he's outside, he's maybe outside as part of a stack or a bunch, but he's just the outermost left guy. So some of the charts are a little misleading, but they have moved him inside of the slot. They have moved him to the other side of the field. They have put him tight to line. There was one play that I saw, and I was like, who just chipped the defensive? Did Terry just chip the defensive end? He was lined up as a de facto tight end. So they've moved him around a little bit, but when he's in there, he's still running a lot of vertical type routes, because that's what he's great at. It's, okay, let's get Terry in the slot and have him run a deep over, because he can run past people, and he will run with power through contact in the middle of the field and can get to a spot. And if you can get him matched up on a linebacker, then that's a great matchup, or a safety, that's a great matchup. But it's not the same as like, hey, let's get Justin Jefferson in the slot and know that he's going to shake someone at the top of his route 12 yards in, and then you hit him on an in cut and timing, and that's reliably open. Terry's not an exceptional separator. Again, great contested catch guy, super dangerous with the ball in his hands. I would like to see like some pop passes and some end arounds, and like find ways to get the ball in his hands reliably without him having to get open. But when it comes to the qualities that Terry has, and you compare that to some of the other elite wide receivers who do get this, let's call it spam treatment, he's just not that elite of a separator. It's something he's gotten better at over the years, and it's something that, you know, if you're a quarterback and you develop a trust with Terry, you understand the timing, you can, like, he will win. You just got to make sure it's the timing is right, because it's not going to be quite as risk-free as a guy like Jefferson, who's obviously the very, very best in football. I believe Jaden Daniels talked about this as well today. Here's the man who actually has to pull the trigger to Terry, whether you know, it's one of those easy, quick design screens or reading something out down the field.
Yeah, I mean, go out there and pick the spots. I mean, you know, obviously we got to get Terry the ball. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to spread the ball around. Defenses are going to key on Terry, respectfully, respect to him, because of what he did in his league. But at the end of the day, man, when it's time and we have a one-on-one matchup, you know, sometimes, I mean, Terry's out there, you know, go let him win. But other than that, you know, we're just going to keep playing our game. We're going to keep moving forward and just go from there.
I do think in some situations, and I wonder if did Taylor leave one of those T-shirts around somewhere? He's got maybe just, you know, in the equipment room somewhere, one of the equipment guys can dust off an old Bleep It Terry's Down There Somewhere T-shirt that Taylor Heinicke had.
Ah, one of those.
Yeah, because at some point at the end of the day, like, it's 3rd and 15. Like, we can throw it down to Terry. Sure, arm punt. It's actually something Burrow's great at, by the way. He's like, it's 3rd and 15. If I get sacked, who cares? Like, let's make a play. And, you know, Burrow's excellent at that, and something that Jaden is certainly not afraid of, a one-on-one matchup. But I also think that's a good point by Jaden, too, in terms of the attention paid to Terry and how it affects other guys, because, you know, something that Logan said when we were talking about this morning is Malik Nabers getting 18 targets on Sunday wasn't actually a good thing for the Giants' offense. It was a sign that they were forcing it and that nobody else could win. I'd much rather see Terry with 9-8 targets than 15, and Zach Ertz getting his, and Austin Eckler getting his, and a De'Ami Brown or a Noah Brown or a whoever else getting theirs, because I think that is actually the sign in this style of offense that the ball is getting where it needs to go, and it's that's just a much healthier sign of the offense. I also think, for whatever it's worth, they're going to run the heck out of the ball on Monday night in terms of attempts, as long as the game flow doesn't get out of whack, because Cincinnati's had a lot more trouble with the run. So we're going to spend all this time talking about how to get the football to Terry, and then they're just going to hand the ball off to Brian Robinson and Austin Eckler a ton, and that's probably the better path for Sunday. Something we should talk about tomorrow is there's more commentary and some more reporting from, you know, everyone from, like, Mike Wilbon on PTI to Mike Sando, who's kind of a more, you know, high intellect football reporter in The Athletic, talking about these rookie quarterbacks playing. And I think that's something we continue to dive into is Jaden and Caleb Williams and Bo Nix all get more reps this season. And two of the three are struggling, and Jaden's ceiling has only been so high so far, although I do think he is very well set up to continue to grow in the situation he's in. But with the Bryce Young thing, I think a lot more people are looking at how young quarterbacks are coming along in the league. And that's that, on top of something that I want to, you know, double click on tomorrow, something that we'll talk about with Dan Pizzuta of the 33rd team next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.